some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
Before you stands the monolith, keeper of the cosmos, anchor of reality. I am its steward. We have much to discuss.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is an immortal favorite.
It's still undead.
It's still undead. Some of them are undead.
It's kind of a rhombuses and squares thing.
Yeah, we're not undead.
No.
But there's undead to be found.
Yes. And this is our first episode about Immortal Unchained, which was developed by Toadman Interactive and published by Game Odyssey back in September.
Toadman.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Toadman or Toadman.
Toadman. Okay. Toadman Interactive.
Mm.
It's almost a complete sentence.
It's still missing a verb, though.
He interacts. Yeah, it's somebody talking about with a poor grasp of language talking about a toad man.
Toad man interactive. Yeah, like he's in a place called Interactive, but there's still no verb.
Yeah.
It's well, toad man it. Colon in.
Yeah, it's a. How about if not a complete sentence, a movie title?
Yeah,
like toad man colon interactive.
Yes.
Finally,
it's good to be back.
I am sick of these toad statues personally, and I need an interactive toad man for my life.
Yeah, I want to boss around a toad.
So September 2018, so pretty fresh.
Yeah,
this was
initially a request by one Jeremy Greer.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fresh suggestion too, because he came to us like I think as he was playing it, saying y'all got to do this for WoW. Like, we'll do you one better, buddy.
Yeah. Well, this game has had this weird in the like a certain section of the Soulsosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like been, you know, I haven't seen a lot of talk about it from a lot of the kind of usual voices, and then from the Twin Humanities guys and some other people who are on Twitter. Have been and are friends of ours as well,
mm-hmm.
like Jeremy and I and stuff. Had this just kind of swept them like wildfire in this kind of weird word of mouth
mm-hmm.
kind of way. And just like for a little while, my Twitter timeline was full of Immortal Unchained and strategies and people commiserating about parts and people sharing strategies and getting past parts,
mm-hmm.
such like that. And it was a good thing to have cross my doorstep.
Yeah.
Because like when, you know, one of the things that's not really a generality about the game, but is worth talking about, and I think it's going to be true about these episodes, is I really like this game. You're fairly early into it, so, you know, it's probably too early to have like kind of a summation.
Right.
But I think these will be controversial because this game is not necessarily like universally lauded. Like, this is a very mixed reception game.
Yeah, in the Wikipedia article, it's mixed to negative or like mixed to average or something like that. I can maybe see a little bit where that comes from. So I never saw any reviews of this like on major sites, and I didn't really go seeking any out because I didn't want to kind of ruin it for myself. But with a certain kind of, so two things, with polish bias being one thing, and the other thing being like, I don't know, maybe after Lords of the Fallen and the Surge, like there just wasn't a lot of goodwill for something that feels as kind of carbon copy Souls like as this does.
Yeah. You know?
Like,
yeah,
like
I was thinking that too.
It's barely indie. In presentation, right? Like, this got a box console release and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to fit in either place. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a weird kind of middle step because it's a very small studio.
Yeah.
A very small studio, and the game like generally does have, you know, like looks good.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some little, like one of the big complaints, like I read reviews, a lot of things about people complaining about the animations and such.
Yeah.
And when I was trying to find, like, there's two things that I think are kind of responsible for the reception of this. One of which is what you mentioned, essentially, like polish bias is a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is just like, there are a lot of people who are like, oh, you're charging full price and it has these animations. Like, that's not okay. The other thing, though, is I think large portions of this game, more so than every video game, because this is true of every video game, it's like I keep calling it a cilantro game. Because, like, you know how cilantro, like, some people it tastes like soap and some people it tastes like a delicious herb.
Right.
And this game really feels like that to me. Like, things that I think are very good about this game, I watched, you know, screaming YouTube, because it's hard to find reviews. So it's just like the cranky gamer. No. On YouTube, like the change my diaper gaming 92 or whatever, online, just complaining about the like I'm like, the level design in this is actually like pretty clever, and him just being like, this is some of the worst level design I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, I just had a really different experience than you about this, and I can support my thing, you know, and your thing, you also can just be like, well, you just didn't see the same things I did. You know, or just didn't go at it from the same pace or the same posture or any of those things.
Yeah, or there might be a semantic thing. Like, what are you talking about in terms of design? Are you talking about the wireframe? Are you talking about flow? Like, is it the just any number of like semantic differences, right?
He was specifically talking about the example, and I can't even remember his name, so I couldn't call him out if I wanted to.
Right.
But it was about not knowing where to go. And I was like, to me, you know, there were situations where I just knew what I hadn't explored yet.
Yeah.
And I just kind of moved forward, and there would be multiple paths. But I ended up really enjoying how, like, I would go down a side path and then it would loop back to something I knew or something familiar in a way that, like, felt really good and organic, and to him felt really bad.
Yeah. Like the way the, you know, so caveat, I've only done, you know, through Arden, you know, basically what we're going to be covering on this, you've played more of it, but like the way that these levels fit together feels really familiar to me. Like, this is an incredibly comfortable game, especially for somebody who loves Demon Souls and, you know, Dark Souls, Demon Souls more specifically. Right.
Yeah. But there are Dark Souls elements as well too, where things will kind of loop back. Like, you'll have your perish moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not quite with as much like impact as that, but you still get some of that. But yeah, it is, to me, it also felt very familiar, and the places where it didn't, like, just to me felt like first studio, like, pretty excusable.
Yeah.
And then other people were like, this is unexcusable. And like, it just, I can't find exactly what the difference is. Like, I know why I think the way I do, but I can't, it just came down to just like a cilantro thing. Like, I just had a different experience. Like, this tastes good to me.
Yeah. Like, the thing I love about this is the thing you hate about it. Like, shit.
Yep.
Yeah. There's no middle ground on that.
Yeah. It's like the hated Kingdom Hearts franchise, like, where people will show a scene where it's like, look at this really dramatic scene where Goofy dies. Isn't that great? I'm like, no.
Well, I like the part where Goofy died.
Like, I hate it. Like, I just, you know, and they're just like, I love how serious this is. I'm like, no, I hate how serious this is. Like, I just, you know, and that cilantro tastes like soap to me.
Yeah.
You know, but this cilantro tastes like cilantro to me.
Yes. You know? The cilantro tastes like Bugs Bunny getting a cancer diagnosis. Like,
yeah. Good.
it's caused enough trouble.
Yeah, he's a real troublemaker.
Yeah, it's, you know? Instigated.
And with his lifestyle?
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's not going to get the big C at some point, you know?
Yeah. A lot of beta carotene, though. He might be okay. He might bury us all.
Yeah, I hope not. If when I die, Cole, like, as somebody who will probably be like, you know, probably like in the top four people to know when I die or so in terms of time, I need to make sure that there are no troublemaking rabbits at my funeral.
If I'm not responsible for it.
If you're not responsible, or if you don't die first, or we don't die in like some kind of, you know, convention explosion, then I need to make sure there are no cartoon, you know, I don't even know how to describe Bugs Bunny.
He's an instigator.
He's like an instigator, but to no end. Like, he's not like a, he doesn't, I don't, what is his outlook?
He's wascally.
Like, what? Well, I know. I mean, I understand he's wascally, but what does he want, Cole? Like, what's for his politics? I don't.
You might as well ask about the Joker. Gary, I cannot explain the moon and star seed.
Yeah, I guess he is like the Joker, and I did not want any Jokers. Dog Joker, Batman Joker. No Jokers at my funeral. No Jokers, no Hulks.
Yeah.
So let's get into why we're covering this. So, like, why this is similar to Souls-like and what it is different.
Yeah, why this is, in some regards, actionably similar to a Souls-like.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I guess that's a good, like, it's the last point on our list, but it's probably worth talking about first, because it kind of is a patina over all of this. This is the Souls-est of the Souls-likes we've done, at least as Souls-y as Lords of the Fallen, if not more so, but, like, a lot more Souls-y than Neo. Obviously it's the same perspective, so it's, you know, feels more similar to Salt and Sanctuary. Like, this feels like a very Soulsy Souls-like.
Yeah, like this, the you know, it is a third-person camera centered on the character, kind of looking down. You've got the you got your items and your weapons down in the lower left. Just a bunch of stuff like that. Like, yeah, like, and I would even say it's, you know, it's a bit more Souls-like than Lords of the Fallen, specifically because it just, like the pace feels less kind of like leaden than Lords of the Fallen does, right?
Which is even, like, Lords of the Fallen, like, if you look at the Souls games, and starting with Dark Souls, because Demon Souls, you had a fairly quick movement speed, as getting just faster as they go, which kind of happens. Lords of the Fallen was even slower.
Yeah,
the Dark Souls one, like Lords of the Fallen, is like, let's take this way back. This is Dark Souls one.
Yeah,
speed. It's like the pace, rhythm, kind of ease of movement, the dodges. It feels like Demon Souls or Dark Souls, and that is weirdly enough, like kind of a retro, breath of fresh air, and Soulsborne's now, because Soulsborne's are just faster. You know, give me faster, smoother, harder.
Right.
Not slower, more considered, stodgier. You know, and this is very much Dark Souls, Demon Souls in terms of pace of play.
Yeah, it feels like they tuned the game with that as their target, or at least their template, right? You know, and obviously there are concessions built in, because this is, you know, like, you have a melee attack, but that's secondary. This is a shooter.
Yeah. Yep. We'll definitely, and that has a lot of kind of knock-on effects.
Yes.
Which we'll talk about. And even the one of the more impressive things to me about this game is the way that they rolled that into Souls rhythms. So, you know, we talked about that kind of obvious stuff, but it really goes deep. So, like, the stats are very similar.
Yeah.
And you have very similar builds. Like, you build towards different guns, but it's still the kind of, like, I want to be quick and reload quickly and use light weapons versus I want to use heavy weapons and be a little bit slower at that stuff.
Yeah. There's specialties toward, like, different ranges of combat as well, because you have different kinds of guns, you know? So, like, my guy, I rolled up as a mercenary, but I want to do, like, shotguns and scattergun kind of things. You know, like, you roll as a different kind of character with different stats based on that. It's a little bit like being melee, right?
Yep. Yeah. You can actually do, like, a melee build, according to the devs. They've talked about that. Like, that is a viable thing to do.
Is that like having a magic build in Bloodborne?
I imagine so.
Yeah.
But by the end of my character, so I beat this game, and you don't have to go to New Game Plus. I have not gone to New Game Plus. I'm still in my old world. My melee weapon does wreck shop, pretty much. So, like, I don't tend to use it so much, but it is very strong.
I
so
like I can having
see that.
It.
Yeah, I can see that working.
Yeah.
But there's Estus in this. There's the equivalent of that. There are syringes that you get the refill at bonfires, but they're obelisks.
Right.
Now. So we're going to have the Bloodborne caveat as well, is we're going to call things souls instead of bits.
Yeah.
We're going to call things bonfires instead of obelisk. We're going to call things rings instead of aspects. Yeah. There's like a cipher.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Yeah. I mean, like, it is like a theme that they have placed over top of it. Right. You know, because they are putting you into this kind of mythological based sci-fi kind of thing.
Yes. Norse sci-fi.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Like, vaguely Norse inspired, but also so far in the future.
This is probably a sore point of comparison, but when I looked at it initially, it was like, oh, this is kind of like Too Human.
Sure, yeah. I just kept thinking like Warhammer too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we'll talk about the aesthetic in this, but
yes.
To me, it is very much a mixed bag. Like, there are parts that really work for me and parts that don't.
Right.
Another really huge point of comparison here is that world design, which we mentioned, Demon Souls, but this is down to, like, having a hub that goes to different gates, and those different gates, you kind of do the first level of them and it opens up, and then you can go deeper into those different worlds. So there is like a, you can talk about this like 1-1, 1-2, you know, 2-2, 2-2, like they have different names in that, but that is, it's definitely feels like a point of inspiration, or at least comparison.
Yeah. You're going to different planets instead of different parts of Boletaria. But yeah, it is structurally pretty similar. Here's a question, Gary, as somebody who's beat this game, is it possible to warp back to the Grand Hall?
Yeah.
Okay, because I had to hoof it back because I found
you can't do it the first time.
Ah, gotcha.
Like that first thing, it doesn't, like, fast travel does not open up until the Anne Orlando moment. There's an Anne Orlando moment.
Yeah.
then you can actually do fast travel. They actually handle fast travel in an interesting way. This is a mechanic spoiler, so don't feel bad about it. You can only fast travel back, you have to pay for it. So you activate your obelisks, and by putting an investment, then that becomes a fast travel point.
Oh, it's kind of like putting a soul into a bonfire a little bit. Yeah. Or putting humanity into a bonfire, rather.
It ends up being really clever. Like, you don't actually know which ones you're going to need, but you have that sense of, like, well, for safety, like, I would like to be able to come back here.
Yeah.
In case I die and I need to bounce off it and go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And the investment is not so high.
It's like it's like if bookmarks cost $50.
Yeah, it's a weird, a specific dystopia goal. But you can eventually warp. And they also, only the first level, which we're talking about today, makes you actually hoof it back, which is a very weird decision. The rest of them loop back.
Okay.
In a way that, you know, generally, like, you don't have to go all the way back. There's some kind of shortcut or something like that. I'm not sure why they did that. I think my best guess is that they want to engender that sense of mastery. You have, like, when you go through the burg the second time, because I ran through it with my end game character. I was obviously much more powerful, but also the first area feels very small, where it felt huge to me.
Yeah.
The first time I played it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another Souls thing.
Yeah. That feels great.
Compression of space.
It's one of my favorite things about this series. Yep. And it's good to hear you say that they kind of nail it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sure. Kind of into the world design a little bit. There's a little bit, from what I've noticed, there's a bit of Dark Souls in that too, and that shortcuts.
Mm-hmm. Like,
they throw them at you, and that is a particular itch that I love having scratched.
There's even more to it than that too, because you eventually will start, and this is, again, I feel like it's a mechanic spoiler, and I don't think it has lore implications, so I don't mind spoiling it.
Mm-hmm.
Areas start connecting to each other.
Nice.
Either through portals or just directly.
Hmm.
Like, you will be in an area. Like, I had a really great moment today when I started doing it, because I went to a door I couldn't open before,
mm-hmm.
and I could open this time, and it opened up into a late game area, to an area I'd saw but I couldn't get to.
Oh wow.
And it, like, answered that question. I was like, oh, like, that's how you get up there. Like, I had to come from a different, you know, a portal from a different world. Let's talk about how this game handles lore.
We should. So again, another thing that seems kind of actionable. Just in terms of even the opening, which, you know, like, instead of saying in ancient times, in a time long ago, I'm kind of half just being snarky about that, but people who have played Dark Souls 1, they will be familiar with kind of the setup that they give here.
Yes, very, very much.
Yeah,
very much so. All that stuff is very similar. One of the differences is, instead of finding things on weapons, you find bespoke lore objects on the ground. They're just little trinkets, and you can pick them up and read stuff and kind of get a sense of what's going on. The story is actually, like, not particularly complicated, but it seems like it at first.
And a lot of names.
Yeah, you're thrown into, like, a noun soup.
Yeah,
that's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give a quick shout out to Sen Plus, who is another advocate and kind of fan for this game, who is taking the task of kind of compiling all of those lore items into a document that they were kind enough to share with us, so we could kind of get our feet wet.
Yeah, yeah.
And learning about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so far that's what's very similar, and that's a lot.
Yes.
That's, like, most of the things.
Yeah.
But there are some big differences as well.
Yeah, we should talk about those. And, you know, just different doesn't mean bad. Like,
no, not at all.
I think this first one that we're going to talk about is kind of a real marvel, which is that this is, like we said, it's a shooter. And they have somehow managed to take this, you know, take a shooter and make it feel like a melee fight in a Souls game, specifically with the rhythm of play.
Like, you are, enemy attacks, range attacks have big windups. They have very clear audio cues. Like, I think the audio cues in terms of, like, things you have to react to in this game are kind of best in class for Souls-like.
Yep.
I don't think there's a Dark Souls game that does that as well either.
A boss will make a particular roar sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But it's here, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, and they have to. Like, it ends up making some of the later very pernicious enemies, like, manageable, because you have to listen rather than watch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just because it's not very often in a Souls, you know, a mainline Souls game, that something, like, comes at you from off screen and from a distance, right? Like, in a shooter, you have to deal with the possibility that you could die and not know why.
Exactly. Right?
And that just cannot fly in a Souls game.
Yeah, you have to feel like you know what did it and that it was your fault. And here, They do that through audio cues. They also do it through very slow moving projectiles.
I love that. They take such a Doom approach to it.
I was going to mention Doom too. Like there are no hit scan weapons in this.
Yeah. I mean, you have them.
You have them. You have sniper rifles, but even the enemy snipers are, it's a projectile.
Yeah.
So like, only the player gets the superpower that is hit scan.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are just Dark Souls fans who don't really play a lot of shooters, the difference is projectile. You can see the bullet. It's moving through space.
Yeah.
Hit scan. It's just once the cursor is on a thing, the damage just teleports to them.
Yeah. Think about like a pistol in Half-Life versus the rocket launcher in Half-Life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And these enemies are almost exclusively rocket launchers.
Yes.
You know, not literally, thank goodness, but they all have windups that are visual, that are audio, and then the bullets themselves are slow enough to get out of the way.
Yeah. Or dodge through them with your iframes.
Yes. And the iframes are actually really generous.
Yeah.
In this, one of the things we didn't make a note of this, but you also don't have a shield in this.
Right.
So that is how you have to get away from things like that. And there are a couple places where I do think the design kind of falls down with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some enemies that will stick you, you know, you're fighting enemies in tight corridors and you can't really dodge.
Right.
And those are pretty obnoxious. There's one specific area that I think that's very annoying with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I were, you know, putting together a wish list for a sequel, there would be something that involved deflecting damage without moving, like a parry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you could time something and reflect bullets back or something like that. And I think that would be very welcome.
Yes.
In this. But as it is, like it feels like, you know, if you are having an assault rifle duel with an enemy on another ridge, which is how I took care of this first level, it does feel like standing toe to toe with a hollow and them swinging, you dodging out of the way and then counterattacking.
Yeah.
While they're open, before they reload or before they line up their next shot. Really, really neat. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't have necessarily imagined, you know, how to do this, or I think it's just like a really admirable job.
Yeah. I think that they were pretty ingenious about the choices that they made mechanically with the way projectiles work. Something that I think will throw somebody off if they're coming into it from other third person shooters is the lack of a cover system.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's no Gears of War on, you know, I will stick to this waist high wall and then, you know, pop out and take some shots. You are moving around like a Souls character. And you're just kind of like, you know, like pressing the aim button will put the camera kind of like right down the line of the gun over your shoulder and swing swing the camera with your sight. But that's pretty much the only affordance that you get. So there's no like posting up against a corner and then like popping out and taking somebody down.
Well, you still do that. There's not a system for it. Mm-hmm. So like cover ends up actually being extremely important, but because the rhythms are so slow, you don't have to like stop and pop like quickly. You stand behind cover aiming and then you sidestep to the right, shoot, sidestep back.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is all, there's no like your character getting glued to a thing.
Yeah.
Which there is, because you know, at a glance, this can look like a little bit like Gears of War or something.
Yeah.
And it's not. So yeah, that takes a little while to get used to. And I don't think the game would be better with one of those.
No, I don't either.
And the game has a lot of different systems to encourage you to move forward. Obviously, grenades, which are very classic. You can use those on entrenched enemy positions, but they can use them on you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then also enemies will kind of... you know, their enemy spawns will happen. It's very like, I didn't actually find any times that enemies spawned behind me, but enemies will spawn and kind of run you down and try to flank you a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And get in there to stop you from just being in cover for long periods of time.
Yeah.
So,
this has other kind of knock-on effects. So, you know, you have an ammo count, not just, you know, per clip before you need to reload, which weirdly acts kind of like melee stamina. So it's like this, it's like they separated attack stamina from dodge and run stamina a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so when you have your clip, you have to reload and that's pinned to a stat. And also, your ammo refills at your obelisks or at your bonfires. So it's like having a spell count there too.
Yeah.
You know, including very, items very that you can consume. Yeah.
Very limited, so similar to magic. So you can refill that with some items that, you end up being kind of rare, and this actually lends itself to builds. So like a sniper build, the big thing with sniper rifles is they're extremely powerful, but their ammo cap is very, very low. So like if you are playing as a sniper, you will need to make every shot count, and you are likely, you're going to need to have a backup weapon for that, because you will run out of ammo generally. And so reloads end up being, you know, you actually, when you use your health item, when you use your syringes, it happens pretty quick. It's like Bloodborne quick. Mm-hmm. But ammo reloads are when you have to time your downtime in a battle.
Yeah. There's a cool little interface choice that they made on the reloads to help you kind of understand like kind of the difference between your reload animation and when you're actually able to shoot again, mm-hmm. which is the aiming reticle gets a little progress circle around it. Mm-hmm. For each like kind of bullet that you're putting in. So like, because I'm playing with shotguns, like it'll, you know, spin rapidly as it, as you load more bullets.
Put in one bullet.
Yeah.
The rest of the weapons are clip based. Mm-hmm. So, what happens is if you don't finish that circle, if you have to dodge or anything, it interrupts the reload. Mm-hmm. So you really have to have time to reload.
Yeah.
This is also something I saw in reviews as like a really big negative, but I think that's where your backup gun comes from if you can't do that.
Yeah.
You start out with the ability to use two guns. If you really just need to make some space, you can do that with your backup gun and mm-hmm. then try to get somewhere where you can do a full reload of your main weapon.
Yeah.
One thing too that like I just don't know where else to put this, but it would be in stamina, is that your stamina in this, will be, if you run out of stamina, if you get hit, you will get knocked down.
Yeah.
So you have to manage your, you know, not your reload, your bullets necessarily, your clip, but you have to manage your actual stamina much more tightly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Souls, if you run out of stamina, you can't dodge and it's a huge bummer. Here, though, you'll get knocked onto the ground and you can still be hit on the ground.
Yeah.
Lots of situations, it is a death sentence to do that.
Yeah.
So
the other knock-on effect, at least that I've noticed so far, is it does change the way that the stages have to be designed a little bit. So, you know, Dark Souls stages do tend to be a little bit vertical. You can't really have a situation in a range game where you're just kind of like rounding a corner into a combat bladder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to be able to see what's coming, or you know, you have to manage lines of sight in a canny way. And I think that, and you know, like, again, given the limited amount I've seen, they've done that admirably.
Yeah. And another part of that too, that like, I'm just, you know, we didn't have our notes, but I'm thinking about it now, is that they do manage to have different approaches,
mm-hmm.
In a lot of the levels, like the level layout. And this is something, there's a, Jeremy does a Dark Souls show called Don't Give Up Skeleton, mm-hmm. where he interviews people about their experience with Dark Souls. And he interviewed the lead level designer of this game.
Oh, nice.
It is a good listen. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that they had some areas where they kind of kept it as like an open playground and just kind of, you know, they wanted people to be able to approach however they wanted. Other areas they came up with, like, if you are a sniper, this is the best way to approach this situation. If you are a shotgunner or an SMG guy, this is how you should approach the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So most areas in the level, there are actually are multiple avenues of kind of approach.
That's really smart.
To it. And if you are beating your head up against something, there tends to be a smarter way
mm-hmm.
to do it. And this, what's really interesting is this actually even applies to bosses. There are boss arenas you can enter from different sides, later in the game. And that makes a big difference.
Nice.
You know, and to my shame, did not actually figure a lot of these out. Like I did the boneheaded way and didn't find the alternate run up until I was leaving it. I went out the wrong way.
Oh yeah.
You know, so, lots of different, and that's a consideration of ranged combat as well, right? Like if you can reasonably assume your player is using melee in general,
mm-hmm.
You can have a set approach. Like Souls games do have alternate ways of approach sometimes, but generally, you know, they're pretty minor.
Yeah.
Here they can be a little bit more significant. Let's talk about the aesthetic.
Yeah. So this was a turnoff for me. If it didn't come so highly recommended and I didn't know that it was so Souls-like, if I knew nothing about this aside from the way that it presents itself, I would probably look at this and say, it's not for me.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Like too human is a damning thing to say and a true one.
Right.
About this. Like it is, it's a very specific kind of like gritty monochromatic sci-fi.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, the undead in this are zombies with tech stuff glued to them. Like everyone looks like Deathlok from Marvel Comics. Everyone does, even down to bosses, and sometimes they'll have kind of some filigree, but it's like tech filigree.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a bunch of knock-on effects as well. It's not just that it's doesn't look good, it actually has some kind of significant effects, I feel like,
mm-hmm.
that are negatives, such as like I can't remember what the name of any boss is other than the three big Lord Soul ones, because they're just like a dude in armor with kind of a, you know, a noun soup name.
Yeah.
And they just look like a big dude with armor with glowy bits.
Yeah.
You know, there's just not a whole lot to them visually that's very striking. And that's a huge strength of the actual Soulsborne games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one in the world would ever mix up like Father Gascoigne and the Witch of Hemwick, or, you know, the Taurus demon with, you know, the Moonlight Butterfly.
Yeah. Like,
they're just very different. And this game does introduce some variety there, but not until the end.
Right.
And that is definitely kind of a bummer.
Yeah, like the lane that they chose with this, I don't really associate it with a lot of like with a very diverse visual vocabulary.
Yes.
Or like ecology, you know, like you're going to get a lot of, you know, Warhammer is also an apt comparison. You're going to get a lot of like space marines or kind of corrupted, you know, techno organic dudes running around and stuff, which isn't to say that the art is bad. Like it's, you know, it's well executed. It's just, it's not an aesthetic that I would, you know, naturally gravitate toward. And it does have not just with the bosses, but also, you know, the areas, like the area we're going to talk about right now, you know, like this episode kind of tends to be blocky hallways. Yes.
Yep. Snowy fields and then blocky hallways.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things where, again, like later they do some better stuff with that.
I've poked around and seen screenshots of stuff with kind of like at least a broader color palette.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so they start, you know, they have a red zone, they have a green zone,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's this weird thing that has a lot of impact. You know, it's not just like not being able. So the enemies, like rank and file enemies, I ended up identifying them entirely by their weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the enemy. And part of like what you miss with that is you miss the like, this thing is fucking cool looking, you know, basilisks are cool looking.
Yeah.
You know, and even not just to throw everything against Dark Souls, like there's something I want to say about that once we get to the end of this, but like, mm-hmm. you know, you missed some of that. You also miss some of that level design that is when it does fall down,
mm-hmm.
that is why it falls down, is there's just not enough detail or color in the environments to have like a sense of variety to be able to move forward. Like I found myself looking at the wireframe more than anything for those cues, as opposed to like cool landmarks.
Looking for props. Yeah.
Looking for props, you know, and I wasn't doing that. I was looking for like the shape of things. And that's another thing that feels very kind of quaintly last gen about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you play Dark Souls 1, like I played the remaster, and you play that after Dark Souls 3, like Dark Souls 3 is so extremely busy. Mm. Dark Souls 1 has just a lot of empty space.
Yeah.
There's lots of just like hallways in those areas. And I like that aesthetic of Dark Souls 1. I don't like the super busyness of Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 better, but something in the middle of that would have been kind of ideal for this.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of navigations you need to do, like it would just be better to have a little bit more detail in the environments, a little bit less of the stark aesthetic. And it is just about impossible to make a cool looking guy in this. I
broke down and made Kratos. So.
Yeah, they just had to make it's Kratos. I've been calling it Kratocretan, like Toadman's Kratocretan.
Yeah.
For how you make your guy, because it's just like, it just doesn't look good. And you get like later you get ways to color your armor, but I could barely ever see a difference.
Okay.
Like I just always looked like this weird, like techno mud man.
Yeah.
And it just like that's kind of a bummer. Like it's not a killing bummer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Vorpal bummer, but it's not good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Weighed up against Lords of the Fallen's Warcraft hyper shoulders, I'd probably take this, but.
Yes. Yeah. But it's still a long way against something you're like really, really cool.
Yeah.
You know? One of the choices that I don't think is actually, I think is also kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really understand the idea behind it, is you can only change your guns out and your rings at bonfires.
Yeah.
That's tied to the ammo system. That's why they do that. But I would just say when you switch to a new gun, keep it the same percentage of ammo from your old gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that would be a hand wave, but at the same time, like the way this ends up working is you get a new weapon. You can't use it for a while. Like you want to check out what this new thing is. You have to wait. Sometimes the spacing between bonfires is pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a bummer. And also, I mean, I guess I do get it. Like they're trying to make you kit out for something. So you can't just be a jack of all trades, but
yeah.
The ring thing specifically, like it ends up giving the sense of trial and error. Like, if I'm going to be facing a lot of guys with corrosion damage, which is this game's version, one of this game's versions of poison, you don't get to see, like, oh, here's a poison guy I have to change. You have to go back to your bonfire change or just die to it and then spec for it. And I just wish you could change at least rings in the moment. I guess I understand guns, but at least rings in the moment, I wish you could change at any time.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know. I think that maybe that's a decision born out of kind of a different understanding of the iteration loop in Dark Souls. You know, like, do you iterate? Do you change your strategy only after death? Or, you know, as you are making your way, do you kind of try to switch up on the fly to find what's most advantageous? Right. I think, you know, based on this kind of being an issue for both of us, I think that that is the latter is probably our preference. Whereas for them, and at least their understanding of the way that they play and enjoy those games, it's that, you know, the bonfire is the point where you stop and reevaluate.
Yeah. And in one hand, it does, like, lend a greater sense of importance to these bonfires because you do everything at them.
Yes.
You know, any of your inventory management happens to them as well. You know, those things. So I get that. It's just, it wouldn't have been, you know, I am willing to buy that as a subjective choice. It's just not the one I would have made, you know?
Yeah. Another thing here. So enemy locations and spawns are not fixed.
Yeah. Which is interesting. They're mostly fixed.
Yes.
But sometimes some things just won't spawn or will spawn. I didn't notice this I thought I was going, you know, I was just paying attention poorly or the enemies had died off screen. But there's an encounter that I ended up doing a lot of times in a very difficult late game area that a specific enemy would sometimes spawn at and just sometimes wouldn't. And I came to it from the same angle every time. There's one way of approach.
No,
nothing could have been different. But sometimes this caster guy spawned, sometimes just nobody spawned.
Yeah.
And if there's a rhyme or reason to that, I couldn't find it. It's one of those things that made me wish this game was better documented.
Yes.
Because I also am, even as we're recording this, I am not entirely sure if, so the way you get rings in this game, aspects and armor upgrades. You get armor upgrades, which are passive benefits. You get these shrines, you get aspects, which are your ring slots. I don't know if they're random or not. I can't tell if the armor ones are random or not.
Are you talking about the placement of the shrines themselves? Or are you talking about the effects that you get from the shrine that is always in this place? Okay.
The effect. Because I was getting things like, I got my first upgrade to my grenade damage, like almost at the end of the game.
Oh, wow.
And grenades lose efficacy like about halfway through the game. Like, I was no longer really using grenades. And then I got like, plus 20% or plus 50% or something like that grenade damage. And like, if this was placed here in an authored way, this is a really weird placement because it's in an endgame area, right? Kind of very close to the end boss.
Yeah.
And the end boss is not like weak against grenades or anything. So I think those are random, but I'm not entirely sure actually.
Yeah.
So if so, that's interesting to me because they're all pretty significant, but they're not so game changing that like you're not specking your armor upgrades or anything. And I got plenty of rings during the game. So I just can't tell. And it's one of those things that makes me wish the game was better documented.
Yeah. Like if there was, there's an X percent chance that there's an X percent chance there's that.
Yep.
Yeah. No idea. I don't know how I feel about the locations and spawns not being fixed. I think that I could see it going either way. Like I understand the purpose of the decision being to keep stuff from feeling stale, right? You want to be able to be surprised even in familiar territory. Does that undercut the feeling of mastery when you're going back through a place you've already been?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't for me because I went back through when I was very powerful. And most of the areas in this I did not go back through. You know, so I didn't have that experience. Ultimately, it didn't add, I think, that what they wanted it to add. Like the encounter in which I ran into it the most, if the caster guy was there, I knew, you know, I took care of him from a distance and it just ended up being kind of a bullet tax.
Yeah.
You know, and, so yeah, I didn't particularly care for it either. It didn't hurt me that much, but it didn't add very much for either.
Yeah.
Something that I'm not sure where to put this. And it just kind of occurred to me, but it's, also functions as a tip for you, Cole, like as you're playing through the game, you do not get to, run past things in this game.
Right. Cause they can just shoot you.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways that they punish that.
Yeah.
They want this to be a game of football where you're making it from obelisk to obelisk, closer to Dark Souls 2. style, you know, where the encounters are harder and then you get to a more frequent checkpoint than Dark Souls 1, where you can speedrun it and run past everything.
Right.
I'm sure there are ways to speedrun this, but every time I was tempted to or pushed to just run past an encounter, you are punished through, like, one, just ranged combat for enemies. Two, enemies have very long leashes.
Yeah.
They will follow you seemingly, like, through the level to catch up with you. Like, once they're activated, they know where you're at. Yeah. They don't, like, you know, get tired and go back to their old spot like Hollows do. That changes the pace of play quite a bit. Like, you are sitting down and just, you have to get through this thing.
Right.
You have to push through and you have to take out the enemies. Mm-hmm. And that is a really big difference between Dark Souls, where, like, a lot of times, either because of mastery in the early Dark Souls or because of tedium in late Dark Souls, I would just run past some enemies. Like,
right.
I'm not going to fight fucking everything in the Nightmare Frontier. Are you out of your mind? Like, I'm just going to run past all this shit because it's awful, you know? And you can't do that here.
Yeah. That's good to know, because it was pretty effective in the final boss run that I did here in Arden. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, but, like, when you're doing that run to get to a boss arena and you're going through the fog door or the equivalent thereof, like, you know, like, haha, no consequences. So I can see that being a thing. And the notes you sent over, you said this game has fewer and shorter boss runs. How do you reconcile that with the idea that the spacing between the different bonfires is sometimes extreme, like you said?
I mean, there tends to be a bonfire right by the boss.
Okay.
Like, the first one, you have to get past a couple things to get to that first boss. From then on out, there will be a bonfire that is just a short run for almost every boss in the game. There are these kind of portals you can go through that you get keys. We'll talk about the key loop.
Yeah.
Where you can go through these portals to these things called Remnant Worlds. And they are usually an optional boss that is based on a regular enemy.
Hmm.
And that is like a supercharged version or with a slightly different moveset or with different adds.
Yeah.
And you go in those to get really good rewards. And when you die, you just respawn at the gate with all your stuff. Like, you don't have to have a bonfire for those. Like, they tend to put you right next to the boss. And then at the very end boss, there is a huge nightmare boss run up that takes like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they never should have done it. And it's the biggest single error in this game as far as design goes. It's fucking maddening.
Yeah.
The end boss is actually not that hard, but it still took me a bunch of tries because I didn't know him. And doing that run was like, give yourself a night to do that because it's frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bummer. It should have done it. But for the most part, the obelisks are right next to the boss.
Okay.
Which I think is great.
Yeah. Another thing that I like quite a bit, and this is kind of a knock-on effect of the range combat, is the presence of weak spots. You know, like in the enemies that I've seen so far, they present as like glowing batteries on their back or like power bits and bobs on the back of their armor. And
tech node.
a tech node. Yes. And yeah, like where you shoot somebody, alters the amount of damage that you do. Also the amount of damage that you do with a shot helpfully is presented in numbers over them when you land an attack.
Yep. So, you know, when you're getting crits, and this ends up being like, when you fight a guy, kind of up front, you know, close to them, you are going to want to be jockeying for position behind them. And later, you know, or if you're playing a high range build, like a sniper build or an assault rifle build, this becomes hugely important to like observe enemies from afar, wait for them to turn their back and hit them in that spot.
Yeah.
And, some very big kind of serious prestige enemies you can one shot with a sniper rifle from behind.
So good.
It feels really good. And also, there's a ring you can get later if you want to fuck around with sniper rifles, that whenever you kill an enemy, you get one bullet back. And that makes sniper rifles, like, that was my go-to weapon for the last fourth of the game.
Nice.
Because I effectively had unlimited ammo.
Yeah. And that's important, right? Like, you want to maximize the amount of damage you do with each shot because they're limited. You only have so many of these things, right? So it kind of brings a little bit of like a survival horror kind of element. You want them headshots.
Yeah.
You know. Something that I don't know where else it goes, but we can put it here, is that the game doesn't just show you the enemy's health bar, but also shows its stagger. So you can actually keep track. And I think this even applies to bosses as well. So you can measure that and then strategize and plan for it.
You can also build for it. Like you can get certain weapons have more stagger damage than other ones. And there are rings you can get that give you more stagger damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that that causes the enemy to stagger, of course. That's very useful. Also, rank enemies, like regular enemies, if you hit them in a limb over and over, you will destroy that limb.
Nice.
So, like, a strategy with a long, you know, if you have a sniper rifle and you're fighting someone with an assault rifle, if you hit them with their dominant arm, that arm will fall off and they won't be able to shoot you. They eventually grow back, but you can actually dismember your enemies from a distance to stop them from using certain weapons.
Oh, cool.
Which is super cool.
Yeah.
We talked about that finding those doors to kind of super bosses, but it's worth kind of talking about this like key economy in this game, this kind of loop where you'll continuously run into treasure chests, doors, and kind of bridge activations that require these things that are called protocols and decrees.
Serium decrees.
Yeah. There's one later where it's like requires a skeleton protocol, and I'm like, what the fuck's the skeleton protocol? Like Mission Impossible Skeleton Protocol.
I'd watch it.
Like, I would watch the shit out of Skeleton Protocol. That's like the Tom Cruise, like the contract he made where he has to keep making those for eternity. You know, and eventually it's just like marionettes posing his skeleton and making them do all these stunts. Short, tiny skeleton. But like so you get these and you get them through regular treasure chests and for beating bosses. And then when you go back, either naturally on purpose, you can go back to old areas, get treasure chests that have like ridiculous rewards in them, or go back and fight these super bosses, which have really, really great rewards as well.
Nice.
One of the things, you know, again, like a pro tip for people playing this or for you, Cole, is don't neglect your hard soul items, your bit canisters, because you eventually get ones that have the cistern class.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, 50,000, 100,000 souls. Like they just give you tons of stuff. Like I found a weapon I really wanted to work towards. And I was like, man, I don't feel like grinding for this. And I looked at my inventory and then I used all my soul items and gained like, I don't know, 12 levels.
Nice.
That I had at that point. Like they're big benefits for doing the side stuff. Yeah.
Not bad.
There might be more than one. There's one that I found that's a roaming boss that is an optional boss that is awesome. Like it came at a point where I really wanted a bonfire. And I went down the ladder and the title screen came up for the boss.
Oh no.
And then I started going up the ladder and it disappeared. And I was like, oh, it's just down there. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I need to fight that guy. I don't like wait.
Thank you for announcing yourself.
Yeah. Arbiter
Niflheim.
Of pain. Yeah. Thanks, forgotten adjudicator. Like you did it.
Yeah. Nice.
So we're going to the last kind of thing, too, just before we actually get into it, two things. One, the game is really poorly documented, as we mentioned a bunch. We're working at getting a good idea of the lore. I've got the main story in mind pretty well, but there are tons of little factions and armies and like minor soldiers and characters that I do not have a good grasp on. And I fucked up one of the NPC quests, two of the NPC quests in this, actually. Fucked up two, and didn't want to restart the game.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of where I'm at with it.
Okay.
It's not like I can just go on a wiki and just find out everything about that NPC. Like it's not there.
You can't just pull up all of their dialogue on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm doing my best, but just know that this is not as well documented, and consequently, this will not be as comprehensive in terms of lore.
Yeah.
As we try to be.
Yeah, and just kind of a blanket. Assumption you should make is if we say something declarative that feels specious, a lot of the connections that we're making are speculation.
Yep. Yeah. So we might not know. And again, another shout out to Sen Plus.
Yes.
Another thing I wanted to say too, just in terms of like comparing this to Dark Souls, which we're going to do a whole lot, is that I want to in Dark or Bonfireside Chat kind of rekindled. I want to break away from the idea that something has to be Dark Souls good to be good.
Right.
You know, because this is an amateur studio. Like this is a small studio. This is a first effort as far as I know.
Right.
You know, and I think that is a little bit unfair when you compare everything to Dark Souls 1.
Yes.
You know, and I want to try not to do that. Like I'm not just trying to find this one platonic ideal and just like chase that forever. Like I want to have these different experiences and see these different games that are trying new things.
Yeah.
With that. And I want to try to keep that in mind for this new relaunch. Yes.
Using that that break to set a new tone, a new expectation, especially when we're going to be going after a bunch of, I mean, just part of the remit of the of Rekindled is that we are looking at, you know, just kind of these other follows, right? Yeah.
So like we'll make those comparisons and we'll use Dark Souls as an example to make them, but just know that like those qualitative comparisons, I don't intend them to be damning or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just, I'm just using Dark Souls. I feel like Dark Souls is a very safe point of comparison for people listening to the show. Like if I say it doesn't have cool inventive enemy designs, like the bone wheels, like you just know what a bone wheel is, you know, and I don't have to like qualify that.
But yeah. The expectation is not that everything we play has to have something as cool as a bone wheel or it's dismissed.
Yes. Yeah. Cause it's not going to.
Right.
Let's get into it. What happens after Crater Creek?
Sorry. It's impossible not to have like a crazy sloped brow. It's quite fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you just look like either a bald or a bad haircut angry man.
Yeah.
With all like you default to like 1,000 prison tattoos.
You default to 1,000 prison tattoos. I think that, you know, it matches and it works because you can only design somebody who looks like they should be caged in a dark room.
Yeah.
Chained up in a dark room.
You are a prisoner, and this is the reason you'd be going to prison for, you know, for this, apparently, for fashion crimes.
I suppose. No, so yeah, you create your Cretan, and it gives you the opening video, the cutscene that kind of explains the creation myth and also explains why we've kind of reached this age of dark as it goes on. So prophecy is told of this time when the sun would grow dark and cold. You know, after it initially sprung to life, and this wind from the abyss, it would surge and the dead would rise in its wake.
This happened, this war ravaged the nine planets. We have nine planets.
Yeah.
And beast would grow and poison the world.
Right.
Black-hearted warriors of legend would rise to reverse this. And as far as we know, that is who we are.
Right.
A
warrior who has been chained to a floor in a cell in the core. You know, I don't know why the door opens. I don't know why he's suddenly able to break his bonds, but he does. He or she.
Yeah, there's an answer to that, like that you can kind of surmise like way later.
Okay.
About your kind of identity, like you are an amnesiac in this. You are a blank slate, but not for the whole game.
Right.
So, and you do your tutorial, starting in the core and the hidden vaults. And you see people, kind of like there's been a battle here. There are people like soldiers, these, you know, that have been pinned to these surfaces with these harpoons.
Yeah.
As you go through,
I'm trying to think of what they remind me of. They remind me of like the dragon's teeth in Mass Effect a little bit, like what they're pinned to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fucking brutal.
Yeah. It's really nasty looking. You also see some enemies kind of, or some characters kind of walking around that you can't quite get to yet. It's kind of a preview, and you fight some regular rank and file enemies. They don't have range attacks at first. You just have a pistol, and then you eventually you run into your first kind of mini boss here.
Yeah,
you have him as a Black Knight, which is a good comparison. And this is your tutorial on charged power attacks.
Yeah, that's something we didn't talk about. It's a little bit like
weapon arts.
Yeah, weapon arts, or if you picked up like a special weapon, like the Drake sword, how it has that like weird fire breath kind of attack to it. Like they're different to every weapon, and you charge them up. So like the first pistol that you get, it kind of creates a poison cloud in front of you that does minor damage over time.
And the game just tells you like, hey, charge up these attacks to deal with this guy. The arena that you're in with this guy, I really like. It's got it's very, you kite him, like he charges. Generally he's a shield guy. He charges and does a shield bash, and you have to like manage your straightaways with him. You don't want to be standing at the end of a hallway with him at the other end. You want to be at angles and have something between you and him.
Yeah. And this arena has kind of like a kitchen island in it a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It would make cooking feel like you're going to a tropical paradise. And since he approaches you with a shield up, and you're probably not really great about getting in people's back arc yet, this is about aiming around his shield.
Right.
Like you shoot him in the feet, you do additional stability damage. You shoot him in the head, you'll do a little bit more damage in general. And that's how you wear this guy down.
Yeah. It's good. I felt really outmatched, but when I figured out how to take him down, It was pretty satisfying. Also pretty satisfying. I think that I like the decree system, you know, like when you take this disposable item and use it, I guess it's not disposable, like you accumulate them. So it's a little bit
finding, based on how many you have.
It's like the Metal Gear Solid, level cards, right?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, like it opens the bridge to the rest of the level.
Yeah. And it's introducing you to that system. You've seen this bridge, you couldn't get past it. Mm-hmm. You go through, you fight this guy, and now you've gone back. And you have this decree, so you can move forward.
Right.
One thing about this tutorial too, I want to mention is that they actually just announced today that they're redoing this.
Oh, fun!
So we're gonna have a little bit of Scholar of the First Sin syndrome.
What are they changing?
They just felt like the tutorial wasn't good enough. They just want to make it better.
Okay.
They're adding a system where you can like put on this mask. Like it sounds like a challenge mode, where after every time you fight a boss, you get to choose between one of two curses.
Okay.
As you go through the game, and they get more and more progressively difficult.
Oh, that's cool.
And they are, I like the idea of the bespoke curses. I'm definitely going to read those. I don't want to do a challenge version of this, really.
Right.
And then they're changing the tutorial, and that's their big update they're doing. People thought they were teasing DLC, but they were teasing that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's fantastic that they're adding ways to modify the difficulty, you know?
Mm-hmm. They're kind of, their whole mission statement is that they want to have paid content eventually, but they also want to support it with a lot of free content. If they're able to. So
neat.
I think that's cool. So you can now, you can use a serum decree to cross a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a little optional area off to the side, with kind of a real fuck you bottleneck. It's like, it's like at the end of a long bridge where people have just crazy line of sight fire on you. There's not an awful lot of room to dodge on it, but then you open up the door and there are more of them there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And one that even comes up behind you. It was like, I died here a couple of times. I think you even lost a lot of souls here for like the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, well played.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tricky, but you get a better pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is great.
If you have the stats to use it.
If you have the stats to use it.
Right.
There is a timed laser trap on the floor that you have to dodge through.
Yeah. Let's get Indiana Jones spears, but they're lasers.
Yeah. Well, there's one of those you run through and there's one you dodge through. They're teaching you about iframes. There's two like laser grids you'll deal with.
Okay.
Because I think the other one comes sooner than this actually, but there's one that that moves towards you and you have to dodge through, and one where it chases you.
Yeah. I don't recall the one you have to dodge through.
They're just kind of like teaching you to sprint, teaching you that you have iframes.
Yeah.
You'll run into some enemies that have burst fire on their rifles, but they have to charge this up, and everything. And this seems very difficult when you first get to it, but it's actually going to be a template for a lot of the enemies. So you want to take some time to figure this out.
Yeah. I just have to figure out that it's like just less about, I don't know. I was about to say it's less about not being hit, but like it's less about soaking the damage and more about like finding the spaces in between the barrages, right?
Yep.
Just understanding that it's not like a regular shooter where anybody can just decide to damage you whenever they want.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this also is where they're mixing up ranged and melee.
Mm-hmm.
Here, so these guys, there's a guy who is a melee guy who will kind of pop out of here along with these two riflemen. If it's the area that I think it is, if not, this happens in a second, where you have to manage line of sight from the ranged attackers while you deal with the ranged guy, which ends up being a skill that you'll use a lot in Arden.
Hmm.
You get your first little lore lit here. There are different kind of classifications of these. This is an ancient shard here. It says the core has been expanded by the Prime since it was built, and it houses the most dangerous criminals in the cosmos.
Yeah.
The basic kind of cliff notes of it, the Prime are your like god race, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
There, and they were at war with a group called the Azurians.
Right.
And they managed to defeat the Azurians in the kind of prehistory.
Right. And that kind of tipped off or led to the decline. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're a prisoner of God. Essentially is what's going on, or like the giants of Anor Londo.
Essentially the Anor Londons.
Yes.
Right before you get to this boss, you find a way that loops back to your first obelisk.
Love that.
That you've been dealing with here. There's also your melee tutorial that comes in here where you get your melee weapon.
Yeah, they give you a melee weapon. I guess there's no other way to do it because they can't just like force you. They can't take away your guns to make you do it. But the melee, I don't like that the melee tutorial is here's a hallway full of rebar.
Yep, smash that rebar.
Yeah,
maybe that's what they wanna change in it.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this, but you have from the get, you have a melee weapon, a main weapon, and a backup weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And those are classifications. You don't get to choose what is a backup.
Right.
Like a sniper rifle is always a main weapon.
Yeah.
An auto shotgun is always a main weapon, but a regular shotgun is always a backup weapon.
Right.
Those distinctions are kind of meaningless. Mm-hmm. Like, backup does not mean worse. What it's doing is enforcing you to have two different types of weapons.
Right.
And you will get more slots for these, you know, towards the end of the game. You will have four weapons total you can carry with you and three ring slots.
Yeah.
Once you've leveled up.
Yep. And it's good that you can just, you know, switch between them at will. Like, they give you both the D-pad to cycle through them, or you can pull up the radial menu.
Yep. And then at the end of this, like, really nasty hallway with tons of pinned corpses, you find the boss in his arena. He's trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is House Carl. House Carl Invader.
Hello.
There's been a House Carl ever since Derek from Neo. Video games have been trying to find a dorkier name for their first boss. They finally done it. It sounds like there's unrest among the Carl community.
Maybe.
You know, if some of them are called this is a thing. Like, a House Carl is a Scandinavian thing.
You get one in Skyrim. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is, but it's just very funny to me if you just think of it as a name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are House Carls and there are Wild Carls.
Yep.
You know?
Feral exactly. Carls. Like cats. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've been raised by a group of feral Carls.
I'm gonna go down to the shelter and rescue a Carl. Yeah.
Spay or neuter your Carl.
No, that is super dumb. I was trying to make a joke about house music, but it's better if we move on. So there's not an awful lot of, like, detail about who this guy is, at least not on his body. Like, he doesn't have his memoirs tucked under his white armor.
Yeah. And House Carls are what they are in real life.
Okay.
Like, a Scandinavian kind of, like, a bodyguard, high ranking servant kind of retainer bodyguard character. Mm-hmm. And that's what they are in this game as well.
Okay.
You will find, like, a lot of the lorelets. You find their notebooks and their helmets and their shields and stuff like that, and learn a little bit about the role of the House Carl. It's not super interesting. It's pretty much like a majordomo / bodyguard / servant.
Why is he in a god prison?
I don't know.
Why is he trying to break out? Well. Yeah. How can he be an invader if he's trying to leave?
Well, he could be trying to invade.
Oh, yeah.
He's not invading prison. He's trying to invade from this area, wherever this war was. Like,
I gotcha.
Or where this battle.
Yeah.
This is your first real boss fight.
Yes. So he's got shiny armor and a big old machine gun. The most interesting attack that this guy has is that he will do these big circular sweeps of fire that are really hard to kind of out angle. So for me, it was like, this was the point where it was really necessary to learn the specific timing of the iframes on my roll and my sidestep.
Dodging through. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He has a charge attack, which took me a little while to find the timing of, because unlike in similar games where you charge at the last minute,
you need to dodge at the last minute.
Dodge at the last minute. You have to dodge right when he starts it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really quick, and it will knock you down, and you can take damage when you're down, which is something I'm on the record of really hating, and I don't like in this game either.
Right.
I don't think you should have to take damage when you're on the ground in video games.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually took me a couple tries. Even though comparatively he's pretty easy.
Yeah. Like the nice thing about this being a range combat game is that, you know, it makes it, you know, it makes it part of the, you know, the regular circle of play, a regular course of play, to understand the radius from the boss to kind of, like, mm-hmm. bait him into the attack that you need. Like, you're not trying to do the regular Dark Souls style thing of, you know, just staying away, but not staying so far away that you can't rush in to get, you know, take advantage of an opening when it's there. Right.
Yeah.
So for this, like, for me, it was really more about, like, manipulating his AI, and something that's helped in these that's helped me in these early bosses is that they remind me of Dark Souls 1 bosses in a huge way, which is they have kind of a limited palette of attacks that the difficulty isn't in they're going to do something unexpected to you, like attack you from behind while you're standing in front of them or something like that. Instead, you know, understanding how those interact with each other. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He also has a big glowing weak spot on his back.
Of course.
Like, it's hard to get to it, but it's teaching you to do that, and that will make this a lot easier.
Yeah.
Once you take down House Carl, House Carl Invader, you hop in this elevator that brings you up to the surface of this planet. And this planet has like this kind of staggered kind of ridges.
Yeah.
On it. Like you have in those, it looks like bismuth, and it does, like the bismuth crystals.
Yeah.
Which if you don't find yourself like a dorky rock shop and get you some bismuth.
Go get you some bismuth. Get a tiny alien city to put in your home.
Yeah, because it's my favorite rock.
Yeah, and lick it when you're lick it when your stomach is feeling upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Swallow the whole thing whole.
Go to the doctor.
Fuck if I care. I don't want you to swallow the
whole thing. Please don't. You're fine.
Yeah. And please don't do it and then say like to the doctor that we told you to. And then but you do though, just say like patreon.com/DuckBeatTV. Like the entire ER ward is our like street team. Our street team is all bedridden because they swallowed.
They're all bedridden with heavy metal poisoning.
Yep. Damn it.
It's the sacrifice that we demand. So you kill this guy and this opens up the way into the Grand Hall, which is kind of your Majula Nexus area.
Mm-hmm. And it's very explicit. Like looks like it. There are just six doors, like six gates there on your way towards a guy who to me looks like the first heavy bad in Resident Evil 4.
Oh, yeah.
Eris guy, like just tall, bald, bearded guy.
He's a prime, right? Because he's like three heads taller than your character. Okay.
He is a prime.
Okay.
He serves the prime.
Hmm.
He is going to be kind of your guide, your monumental or what have you.
Yeah. His name is Aris.
And he talks about this monolith, this thing. We've seen different obelisks of it, but there's this big one in the middle. It's like,
as such, you stand within the Grand Hall, the only sanctuary. But that, too, is in jeopardy. The undead are unrelenting. As the monolith weakens, so does our protective shield. We face a grave threat. You seem to be our last hope.
This is this kind of last refuge against the undead. It's fading. So I guess that's what the House Carl is invading.
Mm.
He is invading this refuge here, and that's what he's trying to get into.
Okay,
guys. And he says, like, you need to join with the monolith. So you go up to the monolith and you touch it and you get your little cutscene in this. I think these are actually like fairly stylish for being budget cutscenes, like for being still paintings.
Yeah.
And that's been like a double A budget kind of game thing for a while. That's what Tyranny does as well. That's what Pillars of Eternity does. Like, do these still shots instead of doing animations.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Animation's expensive. Yeah. And so are assets. But, you know, like,
paintings are comparatively not.
Right. Moving paintings, incredibly difficult, but doing what they did is a fantastic compromise, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. So here's kind of the creation myth. The monolith, you know, was the beginning of all of this, and it created something called the stream, kind of like this life force, right? And from this stream came all of the races, and they all kind of went to their own place, but then the domains expanded and they came into conflict.
Yes. And all these races also include humans.
Yeah.
Like people exist in this universe as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Prime rose above everything else. So the Prime are the top dogs. And because they went to war against these things called the Azurians. And they rose after they won the war.
Right.
They built this great hall and these massive cities. And they had their Age of Light.
Yeah. They built a great hall to like house and protect the monolith. Like this is a sacred space.
Yes.
You know. That holds the thing that created all life in the universe.
Yep, there it is. Yeah. However, this evil began to spread.
Right.
From this prophecy, and all of it has been kind of torn down. We're here in this post-apocalypse.
Right.
Here.
So we have all these portals around us that lead to the other worlds, and kind of our first kind of the medallion portion of this quest. Before we go get the before we go find the wise men is that we need to go find these three Nexus orbs and activate them in order to stop the monolith's power from wavering.
Yep. To stabilize the source of all life. So you go through the one active portal at this point. There is some nonlinearity with those three first areas.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay to go in after you come back. You can pay to go in those early.
Yeah.
You shouldn't because they're way difficult. Like they're actually balanced really well. It does not have that nonlinearity in the first half of the game, Demon's Souls does, you know, even though Demon's Souls does, they do ramp up in difficulty roughly, but I can't imagine starting this game in Viridian, like in the next area, which is a big difficulty spike.
Yeah.
So we start off here in Arden, Scar of the Abyss.
Yes. That's the name of this area. So Arden, you know, we've gone to a different planet, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Arden is this frozen and desolate world where only the dead can live. So they settled here, right? Like, okay, well, this will be a home for ourselves. When you step here, Aris communicates with you. Like, he can be kind of your mission command, but only mm-hmm. intermittently to deliver yes. some lore and flavor. You know, he warned you saying like, hey, watch your step. You know, Arden is void of life, but not death.
Yes. And this is actually, there are undead everywhere. The things we face are undead, mm-hmm. but this is their source.
Yes. This place is ruled over, you know, like this. So this is where the Abyss is. And also it is ruled over by the Queen of the Dead.
Yes. Yeah. Who we will deal with later. Mm-hmm. So we don't go very deep into it. I like that you start out at the source of the thing, but you just don't go very deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a big contrast between the kind of beginning of this area and the end of it.
Nice.
When you get there. There are these things called points of interest in the game, and I think these are kind of sloppy.
Yeah.
These tend to be little like vistas, and if you click, you can look out and it will give you just a little lore lit.
Yeah.
Here it says the cradle of unlife, unsought destination for all mortal souls. The realm of death was carved into the bowels of an abandoned world by the Queen of the Dead herself. One of the things I don't like about this is your interact key is the same thing as your reload key.
Uh-oh.
And you can get into times where later there is an area that's very heavy with portals
mm-hmm.
or gates, rather, that you can click into. And if you're reloading, you can't do that while you're next to them.
Yeah.
And the enemies are right there when you enter them. So you can end up going into an area where you can't reload because it thinks you want to
right.
go back into the last area. And yeah. it's pretty frustrating. Yeah. I wish there had been a different button for that, or they just not had these, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, or not had that kind of that had their reload and their interface button could have been different.
Yeah. So reload and specifically like context sensitive action.
Command.
Examine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you said key, I think people are going to want to know this anyway. Both of us are playing this on the PC. Mm-hmm. You're playing with the controller. I'm playing with the controller. You can play this on PS4 and Xbox One as mm-hmm. well. But we grabbed it on Steam.
And you can play it with a keyboard and mouse, and apparently it's pretty good.
I tried it. It just the weird perspective. I'm not used to pressing S to go backward and having my character run toward the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely get that. I know some people who just found aiming a lot easier.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're here. We got a Queen of the Dead kicking around, and you know, we get two paths. Fortunately, like the lower path is just down to a treasure chest. But for mm-hmm. me, this was a really good cue to like, you know, keep your eyes open. Like this is yeah. what a ladder looks like.
It's all hidden, the lower path.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the ladder, I just stuck with me. It's not significant, but I like the way the ladders are designed in this.
Uh-huh.
The rungs alternate with being actually connected.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks a little bit like fingers interlaced or something.
Yeah, it's like a zipper almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not the most structurally stable way to do a ladder. We've been making ladders for a long time, guys.
Yeah.
You know, we know how they work, but it just kind of looked cool. And I always noticed it.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, oh, that's kind of a stylish, cool design on a ladder.
Yeah.
But just like knowing to look for these little hidden offshoots is yes. very important.
Yeah. The upper path gets you to your first obelisk right away.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be a couple of shortcuts that, or one specifically that serves here. The later one, the one that's at the overlook, mm-hmm. has like three shortcuts attached to it.
Yeah. 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 That ends up being like a very, like the parish,
yeah.
you know, bonfire right above the blacksmith
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
It's good. Yeah. No. And around here is where we find our first NPC. NPCs mm-hmm. have a lot of dialogue in this.
They do. They do. And generally, like, it is not, it is, like, relatively well acted
mm-hmm.
and relatively well written.
Yeah.
Like, it's not perfect or anything,
mm-hmm.
but it is a little bit better than I would expect for something that, you know, it's much better than Lords of the Fallen. You know, it is more compelling and more interesting than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a definite tone to it, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, they get really purple with the imagery as well.
Yeah. And these people end up actually, as you rescue these NPCs, they will go back to your hub and hang out there, similar to any Souls game.
Yeah.
Even though I killed half, you know, I didn't manage to save half of them.
Yeah. Off the air, yeah. You're going to have to tell me what to avoid doing.
I barely remember. One of them, I don't know what you need to avoid doing because I didn't do it.
Oh.
The other one is literally a combat challenge, and if you fail it, the NPC dies.
Yeah, man.
And yeah, you don't get another chance.
Yeah.
So that one, I'm gonna see if I can find somebody who finds that on YouTube, but hopefully you just have better luck than I did because it's hard.
I bet you Jeremy has probably figured it
out. Jeremy might know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Bren.
Yes. She's kind of sitting here looking off this vista, like we're kind of on the side of a mountain. This is a very snowy, desolate, windswept kind of place. And she's surprised that we're not rotting away, that we have not been touched by the abyss, like pretty much everybody else, I think, including her, has been. No, she was in the pit. Like she has like wrestled herself away from it.
Yep. And she's lost her memories.
Right.
So her kind of like quote unquote side quest is you find items, you can eventually bring them back to her and kind of rekindle her memories.
Yeah.
Eventually you get an item for doing this.
Yeah.
Is kind of how that works mechanically. Yeah. And she, I don't know if you can fail Bren's side quest. I don't think it's one with a failure condition.
Yeah. I like her. She's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, she gives you a warning saying like, hey, you know, if she gets her claws into you, you know, you lose yourself. Speaking about the Queen of the Dead.
Yeah. It has this river Lythe or river,
Lethe,
the Lethe, forgetty river. So you kind of head down. You are in this area, this crevasse, with these overpasses, these kind of walkways above them, and this is introducing you to you being kind of like an approach being guarded by ranged combat,
right,
as you go through. So this is about cover, like ducking between walls, hitting enemies while you can. Like, this is where I started with a shotgun as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I eventually, like, I spec'd for a low-level assault rifle here to just to deal with this area.
Nice.
Here. One thing about weapon upgrades in this game is you get plenty of... So weapons you can break down at the obelisk to get upgrade materials. Weirdly enough, it's like the equivalent if like large Titanite shards were the hardest thing in the world to come by.
Okay.
Is what this game is like. Like the second, like basic components, you'll get tons of them. Everything you break down will give you basic components.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced components are really weirdly, like I ran out of those and I switched weapons several times in the game. Like, and I was not shy about upgrading because I wanted to stay ahead of that curve.
Yeah.
But I was always short of advanced components. So as far as just in terms of advice, I wouldn't say, you know, wait until you get your perfect weapon to upgrade it, because you don't start getting, like, ultimately you will want to roll into the end with four epic weapons.
Right.
And they have like kind of a Diablo style classifications. And when you get one, if it's the class you like, spec for it and, you know, change your levels and stuff and or level up to it and everything, but don't not upgrade the stuff you have until then.
Right.
Like if you find a something that seems good, upgrade at least a few times and just, you know, you might have to deal with a little bit of a drought of advanced components.
Mm-hmm.
But so I switched, you know, ultimately I ended up rolling shotguns and a sniper rifle in the end. But at this point in the game for this first kind of third, I used a lot of assault rifles just to get that distance.
Yeah. Like, so the character that I started out as, like the mercenary, it took me a while to actually get a shotgun. I started with a scatter gun, which weirdly enough, even though it's called a scatter gun, there wasn't that much of a damage fall off, you know, as it sprayed. So it just kind of worked out to my advantage.
Scatter gun is an SMG, essentially.
Yeah. But this is, I was just kind of taken aback by how good of a choice it was to make your first real level in this be kind of, you know, kind of take place in this canyon, you know, with two facing walls and the overpasses above you. Because that is just kind of not something that can be, it's not, like, that isn't a configuration that would make too huge of a functional difference in a regular Souls game.
In a melee game, it wouldn't make a difference. Like, those enemies that were up above would just jump down and fight you, and the only difference would be they weren't originally on your level.
Right.
Here, like, you have to deal with them.
Yeah, like there's such a thing as a high ground advantage and a low ground disadvantage.
There's, like, generally, like, a theme to the first three worlds, like this one being ranged combat, the next one being enemies that rush you with ranged combat, and then the third one being like combat tricks.
Nice.
And those are generally the themes of the first three worlds that's treating you
too. It's super canny too, because you go through this and you have to kind of like walk to the end of the canyon to get above, you know, like to get to the next a couple levels up, but you can work your way back, and your first shortcut is to kick down a ladder that lets you avoid kind of being down in that kill pit.
It's a great shortcut too. It's very satisfying So we get that. We're introduced to energy shields.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, these ones for the most part are static, but you will very soon be introduced to enemies that can generate them. They work on a timer, but they're one-way shields.
Yeah.
So enemies will set up cover where they cannot, they can shoot you, but you can't shoot them, forcing you to close the distance. Again, trying to stop you from just doing these sniper duels, essentially.
Right.
In the game. And eventually they will have enemies that can bring them anywhere, but they will run out.
Yeah.
And you can shoot them between them.
Yeah.
So you head up, you get that shortcut. You can get to, I don't think it's a locked obelisk there.
It's like a portal. I thought it was an obelisk when I looked at it, but
it's a gate. That goes to one of those remnant worlds.
Okay.
So I did that, right before we played, when I went through this with my end game character. You can't get to this for a long time.
Good to know. I just, by looking at that total, I was like, okay, at the rate that I'm getting these, it'll be several hours.
Well, this is the first one that requires protocols as well. It's not just decrees.
Yes.
And you have no idea when you're going to get protocols. I think they're Promethean protocols.
Something like that. Funny names. Sci-fi names will never not be funny to me.
Yep.
In a way that fantasy names.
They sound cool to me.
Yeah. So you do eventually have to like get into you get out of the wilderness here into something that looks like a plant of some sort, like sewage or water treatment, something like
or
that.
Undead.
Oh yeah. What?
Yeah.
Processing the undead themselves.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is the source of them. Mm. And as you, I mean, like, I guess that's a mild spoiler, but as you go deeper, like this is where the undead come from. And you are just seeing part of that process in this factory, I guess.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a spoiler, but also like,
I mean, this is where they live. Yeah.
This is, and they say this is where the undead come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the machinery and stuff, the factory of this, because you are fighting skeletons with bits and bobs glued to them.
Mm-hmm.
That gluing has to happen somewhere.
Yes. You need to craft that crazy glue.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you get into this kind of populated courtyard through another. It's kind of like the ladders, but I love the way some of the doors open in this. Like, it's not very practical at all, but they just kind of fold up like origami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool looking. So you get through there. There are these bear traps.
Yeah.
In this place. I have real mixed feelings about traps in this game. It's a big thing in the next area too.
Mm-hmm.
And they have become for like the fandom that are like make up of our friends of a thing that like people love to hate.
Okay.
I think I might just not like them.
Yeah.
They're really insidious. They come, they're a big part of the boss fight here. So it's good that they introduce them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they just ended up, they do so much damage and it's reminds me of that, like getting knocked down thing because there could be knock on damage. Like when you are trapped, you have to free your foot from them, and if there's an enemy there, they're just going to wail on you.
Yeah.
So they end up having a higher degree of lethality that I think is really warranted.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yes, you can avoid them if you know what to look for, you can stop, but they start spacing them out, like you'll go a long time between before running into them, and then they like introduce them in a way late game area.
You forget about them.
It's very trolly.
Yeah.
And your degree that which you like being trolled is you know, it's part of your identity as a gamer American, I feel like.
I think so. I mean, yeah, it's on your ID along with your organ donor status and
your height and stuff and everything. And I am definitely on the lower end of enjoying being trolled.
Yeah.
By things.
I didn't notice him doing a whole terrible amount of damage here in this first spot, but like there was definitely a point where they put one right in front of a treasure chest and I'm like, it's a little cute.
There's different types.
Yeah.
Like eventually they do more damage.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm necessarily down with that, but I also don't know if that's any more of a dick move than mimics, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Make your own decision about it.
Yeah.
Like you'll see, we'll see how you feel.
Yeah. But yeah, they're kind of around. When you work your way further into the plane, you find your first sniper. The way that they handle snipers is actually really interesting. So I did see, you know, the laser sight pop up. You know, just like in the world, or maybe that was a shot. However, if you are under threat by a sniper, you get a little icon, like a little crosshair icon above your guy, letting you know that like, hey, like this run if you can get some cover, hide behind something, cause you're about to get geeked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, it teaches, it's kind of like lets you know that you're in a crosshair. I like that a lot too.
Yeah.
You're also introduced to your first guy with kind of like minigun kind of things.
Yeah.
They shoot you. And I love the way these look. Like the projectiles are so slow and so long that it just ends up being, it feels very surreal and dreamlike.
Yeah.
Like dodging these things. Like you just like casually step to the side as bullets kind of go past you.
They have like a limited home on them. So these are needlers. You haven't played Halo, so you're forgiven for not knowing that they lifted these from Halo.
Mm.
They're just the idea that like the individual projectiles don't do a ton of damage, but if a bunch of them hit you, then they will explode for more damage.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like kind of cumulatively. It's neat. I like needlers in Halo. Not a lot of people do, especially they think that they are weak and useless. When I played Halo with my high school people, I was a needler guy.
Needle
and
king.
I liked it. Yeah, I was a needle king.
I was a needle guy, and I liked it.
they're fun. They're like cool little alien weapons. What's interesting about this, so a large, you know, like this can be a big level full of a bunch of switchbacks and, you know, ramps to a, you know, like with a lot of blind alleys and, you know, like open angles as you reveal yourself to enemies. If you're paying attention, though, you can find this little water pathway that takes you down a relatively enemy-free stroll to about halfway through that densely populated kind of switchback area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this area is very complicated in terms of things. And it does, one of the things they want to do, and they do this later with some stuff, and I only learned this from listening to that episode of Don't Give Up Skeleton, where some of the ways to get to obelisks are also much quicker. Like the second area, you go into this Viridian, apparently there is a way to skip a large portion of it that I did not know. I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
And it's just hidden. And they really, they reward you for exploring those nooks and crannies with like better approaches and bypassing difficult parts of levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I just missed a lot of that.
Yeah.
But this is one of those things where it's like, I did this the hard way, but I didn't have to. I later found out what I didn't need to.
Yeah. Well, with this one specifically, so I found this path like actually from the back end. Like I, took a ladder down. I was like, okay, there's probably a treasure chest down here or something. I got into the water. There was a treasure chest, but then I saw that it kept going. I didn't recognize that I was headed back toward the place that I had already been till I got out to the place where the sniper initially targets you. And then I noticed, oh, this isn't one way. Like this is kind of functionally a shortcut in that it lets you bypass a lot of combat if you so choose. So yeah, it's kind of great. Like
yeah,
I could have just done that if I had like poked around in that corner and understood like, you know, what parts of the water were safe to walk in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I dig it.
Yeah.
So after you, once you get to the top of this area, you cross this bridge, to get another shortcut to the obelisk. Like this, your boss run's gonna be very short here because you have that shortcut. And, then you can go into the area, to fight the boss, which is the Tribunal of Souls, because again, the noun of nouns is always the sci-fi thing.
Mm-hmm.
The camera pans up to this Nexus module there, which is what we're trying to get to. And the boss actually comes out of the ground. And this is your first, non-tutorial boss fight.
Right. Against.
Yeah. The Holmguard Commander.
So this is
sorry,
cool.
I feel like I cut you off there. Sorry about
no,
that.
No, it kind of worked out because I said against, and then you said the name of the guy. So it sounded like we were doing like a Sklar Brothers kind of thing.
Yeah.
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 So another big guy in white armor, except his gimmick is that he's got this gigantic shield. And to a lesser degree, he's got this halberd that'll, fling around at you. But the arena has a wrinkle as well.
Yeah, so his attacks are very easy to deal with. If the arena didn't have the wrinkle, this guy would be no problem.
Right.
He plants his shield and shoots this ray, which you can run around behind him and shoot in the back. This is actually training for like a knight style enemy for later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He does a charge and he'll swing his halberd there, and it's just like much less complicated as far as what you need to learn about the bosses than later Souls games.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you made that Dark Souls 1 comparison, that's very apt.
Yeah.
You know, the Taurus demon has 3 or 4 moves. He doesn't have 12 moves with a bunch of fake outs and delayed hits and stuff.
Yeah.
Like the halberd swing in this, he's got a couple different articulations of it. I mean, it's like a quick one and a slower one, but it's not as kind of like designed to trip you up.
Right.
While you're maneuvering this, you have to watch the arena because on the ground, there are these fissures, these green glowing fissures to kind of the underground of this area with the core of this planet. And if you step on one of them, undead hands will grab your feet and hold you in place for this guy to wail on you.
It took me forever to figure out what was happening because I just wasn't looking at the floor. I thought that it was like coincided to like a stomp that he was doing. I thought it was like a shockwave kind of thing. But then I realized, this only happens when I'm standing on the fissures. And then I paid it. Oh, there are hands. All right, I get it. And then I like that immediately made
a click
and unlocked the fight for me.
Yeah. Yep. And it's there are more fissures as the game, as the battle goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy took me a couple tries. I eventually get to the point where I'm acing a couple of these bosses, but this first one, those hands fucked me up.
Yeah.
A few times.
Yeah. But it's super cool that he that he makes the arena work against you progressively as it goes. Like that's a really interesting way to like notch up the difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is also kind of like a gimmick that we like. There has been like footing or area control in Dark Souls bosses and Demon Souls bosses. Not exactly like this though. Like just a kind of relatively easy enemy, but with an arena that has mines.
Yeah.
Essentially, is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Like I just haven't seen it. There's not. Some of the bosses in this just feel like boss flavored bosses that don't feel like they're doing anything particularly new, but there are a couple of them that do some new stuff.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. So you fight the Home Guard commander. You walk up to the Nexus, which once you interact with this Nexus of Records, these images of other worlds flash by you.
Yes. It's like other worlds, but also like conflicts or important events that have taken place on these other worlds. Aris gives you a warning and don't spoil me, but at this point I do not trust Aris as far as I could throw him. Like he warns you, he says, be wary if you gaze into its eye, it boils with echoes of the past.
Yeah.
Like he is very much trying to make you distrust anybody who is not him.
I like that line a lot.
Yeah.
Like boils with echoes of the past, like the eye boils. Like that's pretty great.
Yeah.
Very weirdly. And in a way we talked about this early on, I don't totally know the idea behind this. You have to run back to the first gate.
Right.
Here. I think that's kind of a bummer. Like the idea being like, oh, like maybe this teaches you other angles of approach. Maybe you'll pick up stuff you missed on the end. Maybe you'll feel the sense of mastery because you know the space.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I think there are just cleverer ways to make the player feel that.
Yeah.
Than just making them hoof it here. And it's like, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it also,
it didn't feel additive.
Yeah. It didn't feel very additive to me.
And coming at this from other Souls-like games, like in, Bloodborne or Demon Souls, they give you the lantern, or the bonfire that lets you warp back. I felt like I was missing something. Like it put me really on edge. I'm like, okay, really? Okay. I know the surefire way to do this. Oh, you're going to make me do it. And I think that maybe like just a little bit of a problem that you have when you have a world that is shaped like Demon Souls or Dark Souls 2, when you have a world that's shaped like that, it's not designed to be especially engaging running through it the other way.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
This game more than some of those things does have multiple avenues of approach, but not enough to make, it's not like a reverse Mario Kart track.
Right.
Like it's not like, it's like the upside down castle is not that fun.
Right.
Even in the upside down castle, but not even here either.
Right.
So you have to run all the way back to that first gate though. And we talk to Aris, he says, join with the monolith.
And dance with the devil.
And dance with the devil. So the gates are open. And gate one, have lots of fun. Gate two, you know what to do. Gate three, come with me. Gate four, get all on the floor.
You're right.
As you do this, you need to you've brought some clarity. You join with the monolith. You brought some clarity to this, but you have to join with reset all the nexus points.
Yes. So we've done one. We got two more in order to get to kind of the next the next stage here. And this is where he says, like, hey, take heed. Many will attempt to lead you astray. Do not fall victim to their lies.
Yes. You can only trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aris also doesn't like that you brought Brenback.
Right.
Yeah.
He sees it as a real sign of just the degraded times that you have brought somebody who is touched by the undead into this most sacred of places.
Yes.
It's like that one old guy, like his reaction when he saw that I brought my Nintendo into the church.
Oh.
Like my grandparents are doing catering. Come on, I'm over here playing Mario. It's like, I can't believe you brought a Nintendo to church. I'm like,
oh, it's, I don't know. Nintendo's got to learn about God at some point.
Yes. But Aris is here, and you can talk to Bren. You get a little bit more detail. Again, you have a lot of dialogue from her. She didn't expect you to live, and she describes what it was like being in the pit. Kind of this sense of teemingness of souls rushing past her, as she is kind of pinned. And somehow she can escape, but in escaping, she has lost herself, right? She gained her freedom, but lost any sense of who she was before she even went to the pit.
Yeah. Yep. So big cost to the Pit. The Pit does not seem like a good thing either.
No.
So we do not need to trust Aris. We do not need to trust the King of the Dead or Queen of the Dead, strangely right. enough. And we are kind of off to the races.
Yeah.
Next episode, we will be talking about the other two main worlds.
Right.
We're talking about Viridian and Apexion, both of which are pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that happens there. Viridian specifically is very long.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we will talk about that in our Londo moment, what happens once you do that, and the game will kind of open up.
Yeah.
So as is, we kind of have this planned out for 5 episodes on this.
Yeah. Including the wrap up episode with your thoughts and comments and with Jeremy Greer coming on to talk about the game.
Yeah. So if you have comments about Immortal Unchained, please hit us up at duckv.tv/contact
mm-hmm.
and just let us know what those are. Those will yeah. show up for everybody here. We thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It is fun to be back. Gary, I'm super happy to be playing this game. I'm champing of the bit to go play more of it actually tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does feel really good to be back.
Yeah.
We really do appreciate the outpouring of support.
Yes. People who are relieved to have us back, who missed us. We missed you too. And we're super grateful that you took the plunge and patronized us and got this episode. We hope that you stick around and play along with us. Like, people should play this game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's probably about it.
Think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Do you have a line from a character? That's how we usually sign this off. But we don't have this memorized like we have Dark Souls memorized.
see, that's the thing. Don't let your eyes boil.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.